Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, national champions, and gunfight survivors help answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. And now, here is your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. I'm your host, John Johnston. Surprises me, too. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com. Get the latest behind-the-scenes photos, videos, stimulating conversation, other stuff. At facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me, it's no one. It's an empty room. Much like my high school career, I am sitting by myself. But guess what? This segment is brought to you by Tactical Night Vision Company. The night is dark and full of terrors, or at least it used to be. But now we have the technology to fight the night, and TNVC is your one-stop shop for all your dark fighting needs. From the TNV PVS-14 Night Vision Goggle to the Maul C1 Plus and everything in between, TNVC can outfit your defense against the dark arts. Doesn't matter if it's your lost keys, the enemy, or that little kid from down the street that likes to wander off. And I'm not going to make a joke about him because, you know, problems at the home are never funny. TNVC has what you need to find things in the dark. TNVC now with financing. Own or finance the night. So, since I have no co-host this evening, I can't have friendly banter right now, but I can welcome to the show John Spears. John, how's it going?
It is fantastic to be with you. Thank you so much for asking.
Well, no, I got to thank you for coming on the show. I've only been trying to make this happen for a little while now, so it's kind of nice that we could finally work the schedule out. I know you're an incredibly busy man.
The fault has been entirely mine, but I'm very glad we could make it happen, bro.
No, definitely. So for those that don't know, so you keep a pretty low profile, but for those that don't know who you are, if you could fill them in who you are, what you do, and we'll hop right into tonight's topic.
John Spears, I'm a co-director of a training company called Forge Tactical. If you're interested about us, Forge, F-O-R-G-E, tactical.com explains a lot about us. But myself and John Chapman, who I'm sure many of your listeners know, formed Forge Tactical fairly recently. John and I were the senior cadre for EAG Tactical and worked with Pat Rogers for many years. And, of course, we lost Pat last year, and we just tried to continue on the EAG legacy, but my own background started out in U.S. Army Special Forces, and I was active in the 7th Special Forces Group on an A-team, and from that point transitioned into a period where I finished my education and then got back into training and teaching and consulting in the defense industry, and have been very pleased to have been able to fulfill my lifelong dream of being a trainer and continuing to contribute to the defense industry for the last 10 years or so.
Nice. So I actually met you, I want to say it was 2013, which only frightens me a little bit since it's 2017 now. But met you at the very first Shoot House class that I got to take with Pat Rogers. Number one, thank you for putting up with me. I wouldn't have if I were you, but I very much appreciate it. Number two, you said something at that class that at the time really stuck with me. And we were talking about like safety procedures inside of the Shoot House. And this is going to be the topic of tonight's show, but you said something along the lines of, and I'm paraphrasing, so I apologize. I should have written it down. I wasn't as good about taking notes back then as I am now. But you said the whole big boy rules thing is and I'll paraphrase since the FCC is listening, is bull crap. And there is no ivory tower that you magically sit on top of once you attain a certain level where safety doesn't apply to you anymore. So I guess my first question to you, I hear big boy rules thrown around a lot online, not so much to any of the classes I've gone to, but can you kind of explain what the concept of that is and then share your opinion on whether or not it is valid or not?
You know, big boy rules, I agree, is something that gets tossed around a lot, and it seems like we usually hear it in relation to some very significant incident or injury occurring during training, be that military, civilian, or law enforcement. And it seems to have taken on the connotation that if you get injured during training, that as a result of the training itself somehow being inherently dangerous or high speed, that it has abrogated the responsibility of the instructor to be the one ultimately needing to provide safe training for the student, and that it's just inherent in the nature of that training that somehow you could get injured just as a normal part of undertaking the training. And of course, that's just completely ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to so frequently be associated with the idea that somehow the instructor himself doesn't need to plan or conduct the training appropriately because the training itself is somehow so dangerous and it's so vital and necessary that there's a good chance where you're going to get injured anyway. And of course, that's completely ridiculous. I truly can't think of any training, no matter how vital, no matter what unit or agency or school that you come from, that would abide by that kind of a philosophy.
Do you think that so I see multiple competing problems there, and I'd like you to weigh in on a couple of them, but do you think that it's people not understanding the assumption of risk versus reward that certain training does require versus how we're able to mitigate that risk? Or do you think it's just influences from other countries' training doctrine where life is much cheaper, for lack of a better term? Or where do you think it comes from?
You know, it's hilarious that you bring that up. I always look at it from this. And as a trainer, I get asked very many times by somebody, hey, Doc, what do you think about this? You know, we were doing this and this from this guy who trained us how to do that. And, you know, we had questions about the validity of that. And, you know, we felt very uncomfortable doing that. You know, one of the great examples that I remember from the last few years is somebody telling me about training with a particular individual who supposedly comes from a former Eastern Bloc country's version of special forces,
right,
who during square range classes to induce stress on the line would randomly select a student to come up behind and apply a carotid sinus technique and choke them into unconsciousness and then have them fight their way back to consciousness and return to shooting on square range.
Hmm.
Yeah, very interesting, right? To which I've, of course, said, what could the possible value of that training be? In what circumstance in the real world would that be something that you need to replicate in that manner on a square range that has any particular value, and especially the inherent danger involved with somebody who is on the line with a hot weapon?
Right.
Being forced into unconsciousness. And, you know, I mean, the mind boggles at what could have happened. Well, you know, it wasn't very long after that that I was working out of country on a short-term contract in an area with very limited access to, you know, international calling. And I wasn't there a few days when my phone was blowing up.
Well, let me interrupt you right there. So hold that thought, because we got to go to break. Right now we're talking with John Spears from Forge Tactical. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scatterguns since 1977. Legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories, as well as the new EDC X9, which offers discriminating shooters 1911 match-grade accuracy, superior ergonomics, and concealability with modern service pistol capacity and reliability at www.wilsoncombat.com. So we are talking with John Spears from Forge Tactical. And John, before the break, I'm sorry, you were overseas with limited cell phone reception, and then all of a sudden your phone started blowing up, and then I interrupted you because I'm a jerk.
Oh, no, when we're up against a hard break, that's what you got to do, brother. We were talking about big boy rules, and, you know, one of the best ways I can explain that, or as I like to say, explicate it with one of my neologisms, is talking about an instructor who we know came from an overseas military background, who had a reputation for being some kind of high-speed trainer who did things that wasn't available in the U.S., who
right.
was pretty well known for choking people into unconsciousness on the line to induce stress in them. And yes, I was overseas not a couple of weeks after hearing about a number of those incidents from that one instructor, with my phone blowing up to reach me overseas to tell me that this guy had just shot his assistant instructor in a shoot house at a class.
And he didn't even multiple have times.
Yes, he didn't even have the professional courtesy to kill the guy.
So it
was a recipe waiting to happen, and all the signs were there. One of the things that I've gotten into over many, many years of having to talk to people who've trained with other trainers, it's very easy to, over a period of time, figure out who is reputable, who is not. But it's very difficult for the consumer, especially the civilian, to, you know, who can I trust with my training?
And right.
That's a really important question.
Yeah. Well, and so, you know, and I want to touch on like that, the big boy rules thing one other time, because I've heard another definition of it. And then I do want to hop into that. The thing that I hear all the time is big boy rules, and it seems to be someone saying, well, there's no rules in a gunfight, so you got to train like you fight, bro, and, you know, safety. It is this cavalier attitude about what we are doing and the permanent ramifications attached to it.
You're so right. Not to cut you off, but
please do.
You know, it's like this. And let me give you a few examples that I have either experienced or been around of that kind of, you know, we're doing realistic training because it's dangerous. It is somehow better training, and big boy rules apply.
Right.
You know, one of the most famous is there was a period of time in the late 80s where, you know, a video came out of a foreign tier one unit who did a series of drills where, you know, they line up in two columns facing each other with paper targets in between, and then the operators on both sides shoot at the paper targets between the operators in the other column,
right.
And that they switch positions and do all of that. And to see that, you know, was somehow considered a valid method of training and made its way out into the civilian training world, you know, certainly frightening.
Right.
I have seen situations where in sniper schools that the instructors felt that it was necessary for the sniper students to learn what it was like to be the subject of sniper fire,
mm-hmm.
so that they would put students downrange within what they consider to be a safe vicinity of a steel target and then shoot at the targets so that the students could get the the feeling for the experience to be engaged by a sniper.
Right.
You know, that's a wonderful example. Something that we have seen is force-on-force training with classes where you use ultimate training munitions, UTM training munitions, which are a wax tip simulated munition, which still have significant velocity behind them and can cause injury, where instructors, as a means of negative reinforcement, shoot their students in soft spots on their body to gain their attention or punish them. You know, that's pretty egregious.
Yeah.
You know, there are many other examples. A couple of years ago, a very well-known tactical combat casualty care instructor, a licensed medical physician, was a subject of investigation and lost his medical license, who was doing TCCC training for the military, and some of his classes involved what was called a hypovolemia lab, where he actually would remove blood from people to the level that it induced hypovolemia before giving them back an auto transfusion so that they would experience what hypovolemia and shock was like.
That's that's interesting.
So, you know, it's very easy in a way to define this complete fallacy of quote unquote big boy rules, that it somehow has to involve some element of danger to be valuable, when I fail to see any value in exposing a student to a situation where they could be injured to any extent, when there's simply better ways of actually teaching people.
Well, and to make a definition and then or a distinction, excuse me, and then we'll hop into the how can civilians tell thing that you brought up in a second. But there's a difference between unavoidable risk as part of what we are doing versus situations where we're not making any attempt to mitigate that risk to an acceptable level. Do you see what I mean? I mean, because like anything we do with guns is, and I hate to say this, we can mitigate risk, but we can't remove all of it. Because they do weird things sometimes. But we can mitigate it to the point where accidents are almost entirely avoidable, and the ones that do happen are almost freakish in nature, yes?
Absolutely. One aspect of it is the trainer can design, plan, and implement training that's as safe as humanly possible, but the student is always the wild card.
Right.
To a certain extent, we control that by vetting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're like yourself, when you came to our basic 4-day shoot house class, which is a 4-day two-man tactics is the basis for all other CQB in a 360-degree live fire shoot house, working in confined spaces. And while certainly the potential for danger and injury exists, if it is conducted correctly by experienced trainers, we have less people injured in shoot houses than we do, you know, seeing sprained ankles on the square range and, you know, little boo-boo cuts on your hands and elbows getting down into prone and catching it on gravel and brass.
Right.
I mean, the number of times I've even had to put a Band-Aid on somebody in a shoot house class, I could probably count on one hand.
Right.
So it's certainly possible to do and conduct training that has a potential for catastrophe very safely.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is, you know, you always have to teach to who's in front of you. You can have a program of instruction that's quite advanced, but if the audience you're teaching doesn't have the requisite knowledge and prerequisite training, and it's not safe to do so, it's negligent to try and stick to a program of instruction that the audience isn't ready to handle.
Well, and that seems to be, we got about a minute and 15 seconds left in this segment, then we have to go to break again, but that seems to be one of the major things that I've run into a lot is the number of instructors that are like, how do I teach? And then they'll define a student. And then it's like, you need to be able to read the individual in front of you as opposed to making broad sweeping statements and only learning how to teach categories of people. Does that make sense?
I understand exactly what you're saying. There's a lot to that. You know, when we come back from break, I'm going to have some very specific thoughts about the different levels of training and really what their value is. And, you know, why one of the major problems is that instructors who think that making square range training more dangerous is somehow more valuable, really losing the point completely about the value of square range training to begin with.
Well, and that's, yeah, and we could see it's an awkward time. So what I'm going to say is right now we're talking with John Spears from Forge Tactical, and you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Surefire. Know your target and what is beyond it. But how can you really know your target? By shining a really bright light at it. And that's where Surefire comes in. From the USB rechargeable 300 lumen Sidekick to the 600 lumen X300 Ultra or 500 lumen M600 Scout Light. There it is. Surefire can make sure you never have to yell Aziz Light ever again. Doesn't matter if you're shining a light at a potential threat or just helping your friends see through their eyelids. When you need all the lumens for longer, you need Surefire. And now is a special offer to Ballistic Radio listeners. You can get 30% off everything at the Surefire.com web store, except batteries and suppressors, by entering the discount code ALLTHELUMENS. That is ALLTHELUMENS, no space, at Surefire.com. So we are talking with John Spears from Forge Tactical. I'm sorry that I interrupted you again for commercials. I know no one wants to hear those, but unfortunately required. So please continue.
Well, part of the underlying issue where we're trying to identify what this misnomer big boy rules is, and, you know, why is it used when somebody gets hurt in training with firearms, is understanding the limitations of different kinds of training. And if you'll stick with me and tolerate me for a second, I'll just go on a little bit of a explicatory rant here. Again, one of my neologisms.
You can go on an explicatory rant with one of your neologisms until 7:45, and then I have to hit a break again.
We'll try it. Well, my philosophy is very simple. Gunfighting as the end goal, you have to realize that shooting is about 10% of gunfighting. The rest of it is your tactics and procedures. The difficulty with that is most training in firearms is conducted on the square range with different forms of shooting instruction.
Mm-hmm.
And the most that you can accomplish on the square range, no matter how great a trainer you are, is teaching skills. And skills are the most basic and they're a necessary element to gunfighting. But again, shooting only translates into about 10% of winning the gunfight.
Right.
You know, what are skills? Skills is simply all the things that you have to learn to be able to be a weapon system operator. You know, and that goes everything from what everybody has to learn, your stance, sight alignment, hold control, blah, 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 you know, those sort of things. Building up to, you know, being able to draw your secondary from a holster, different forms of reloads, ammo management, all those things, no matter how fast you do it, no matter how many people are on the line when you're doing it, they are nothing but skills. And again, skills are extremely important. They're necessary. They're the building blocks of everything else, but it's not teaching a person how to be a gunfighter.
Right.
That comes as we develop like what you experienced in the shoot house, right? You're then taking different sets of skills and assembling them into techniques to solve different levels of problems. Learning how to breach basic open and close doors, learning basic actions in a room, learning how to make a shot with a partner by coming online or creating lateral distance to safely get in the fight, how to identify and navigate geometries as part of a two-man or a larger team. Those are skills that are assembled into techniques to then go on to start solving tactical problems and forming procedures.
Right.
The difficulty, again, with all of that is no matter how much you want to move on to techniques and procedures and developing capabilities like a SWAT team operator or, you know, a special forces operator or something else like that, you cannot do it on the square range. People fall in love with what I call kabuki theater, something that looks cool or looks high speed or looks potentially dangerous. A certain segment of the population go for that hook, line, and sinker. They love that. Mm-hmm. Every time I see somebody on a video where they're doing on the square range some kind of multi-person movement drill with their firearm, where one person is in a combat crouch and they're advancing straight ahead at a target and running their pistol dry, and then the other person behind them, you know, takes the front while the other person rolls off behind them, and they do that ad infinitum. It looks cool. It's a way of manipulating your weapon and moving on the range. I could not tell you a scenario in the real world where that skill would ever be a technique or a procedure that you would apply in a gunfight.
Right.
What happens is, if as the instructor, all you know is how to teach on the square range, pretty soon teaching different levels of weapon operator skills gets a little dull.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to start adding more and more elements in there to make it seem more and more high speed to attract students and keep them interested in the package you're teaching. And the more you introduce those things that most of them have no real world application, but it's just something you came up with because it looks cool or it looks John Wick-like or what have you, the closer you get to that problem where safety is going to be breached and somebody is going to get hurt.
Right. So let me, we'll go back to the, you brought something up in the second segment and then we never touched on it. I really want to. It becomes very difficult for private citizens, especially, to be able to spot quality training. How or what should they be looking for? And is a heavy emphasis on safety one of those things they should be looking for?
Right. And if only there was a database you could go to see how many people a certain instructor has injured or killed.
Yeah, right.
It doesn't exist. You know, it's a difficult answer to an obvious problem, and I don't know the answer. Certainly reputation is part of that, you know, and how do you check up on somebody's reputation on Facebook or the interweb? You know, I don't know how you do, because some people, especially if they're inexperienced students, whatever class they just came from was the best class they ever had and the best instruction they ever got, and it's going to save their life someday. And, you know, it's not much of a touchstone for knowing, you know, was the training conducted well? Was it safe? Was it valuable? So that is a essential question, and I'll be the first one to admit that I don't know the easy answer to that.
Let me ask you a follow-up question then. Do you think that we, as instructors, and not you and I specifically, but the royal we of instructors, spend too much time being critical of techniques that perhaps we don't agree with each other on them, or, you know, ways to implement, whatever you want it to be, like You know, I teach the draw stroke differently. So,
or a real classic example of that, which is a gigantic, you know, what we'd say, you know, Moxnick, you know, doesn't matter, is like a temple index with a handgun,
right?
Or, you know, or high ready versus low ready,
right.
Carbine. Right, there's a lot of tools in the toolbox.
So do we spend too much time laser focusing on stuff like that and not enough time educating the public on it, you know, hey, there's all sorts of ways to do these other things, but here's some ways that if you see somebody doing this, you should probably run away kicking and screaming. I mean, do we not police ourselves well enough? Do too many people get a pass, or do we just, you know, let me give you an example that we could speak to. Pat Rogers, who you know, was a very dear friend of yours and was incredibly influential to me, you know, never said anything negative about anyone publicly. And I understand why he did that. But he could have. And he could have been someone that, had he decided to do that, it would have been incredibly hard to argue with him and his experience and his background. And I'm not saying he was wrong in doing that, but do you think that we are not doing a good enough job in calling out just patently unsafe behavior when we should, because it's not our problem, or we don't want to be negative? And we got about a minute and a half in this segment, and I'll let you.
Well, you know what I'd say to that is, like, Pat was a big believer in train with everybody you can, anytime you can.
Right.
That anybody who's teaching something valid, you know, has something to offer. And if you can take one thing away from any class or instructor you train with, that is valuable.
Mm-hmm.
But on the aspect of safety, oh no, Pat was extremely vocal about people who were unsafe, or you know, in his voice, you can hear him say they're idiots.
Right.
You know. And he was very vocal about putting the word out about that. And, you know, and examples of major safety violations would immediately follow to illustrate his point and
okay.
try and shy students away from those people. So
I used a horrible example is what you're saying.
and there, unfortunately, are many of them.
Right. We got about 30 seconds left in this segment.
Sure.
And then what is the number one thing, just super quick, that we can do to get instructors thinking more about this?
I don't know if we can tackle it from that way.
Oh.
What I usually say is this, you know, an instructor has a lot of authority, and they have the ability to abuse that authority, unfortunately. And what it always gets down to is, as the student, as the individual, you're the first person to prevent an accident or a mistake.
Well,
if somebody's asking you to do something that's unsafe, stop.
Well, and that's a great place to pause. Talking with John Spears from Forge Tactical, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. So we were talking with John Spears from Forge Tactical. And that was the last commercial, so that's good. Before the break, you were saying that the number one thing that students need to be able to do is stop themselves if they feel like something is unsafe. So does that take a level of intellectual honesty that maybe people are not prone to exhibit in front of groups of their peers?
Well, you know, it gets back to the roles we play. It's you know, like the old Milgram experiments about, you know, different roles. You put somebody in a
right.
white lab coat and instruct them to do something that otherwise they would not do, and they feel subject to that authority and that they have to follow that authority. And, you know, I'm not saying that you should be out there arguing with the instructor. That's not
no.
what I'm talking about. But anyone can prevent a mistake or an accident by being aware. You know, the four rules of firearm safety apply at all times. There's never a time, no matter what the tactical situation, where they don't apply. And it doesn't matter what kind of training you're doing. And I'll explain. You wouldn't go to a public range where, when you showed up, There's one guy 5 feet in front of the line. There's another guy 3 feet behind the line. You get on the line, and there's somebody 5 feet behind you firing their weapon past you. Is there any circumstance in the world where you would just stand there and say, I guess that's how things are done?
No.
You'd pack up and leave, or you would grab the attention of those around you, and you would take charge of the line and say, hey, guys, we're having a problem here. We've got to be safe. You know, we all have to take care of each other. You know, you can do it in a mentoring, brotherly kind of way. And if that doesn't work and it's appropriate to be the stern father, you can do that. Or you would just get out of there.
Right.
Right. That's obvious.
Yeah.
So if you were in a situation with an instructor who is purposefully putting the students through evolutions where they are shooting from behind or over each other or doing something like that, which is completely unsafe, I'm sorry to bust somebody's bubble, but there is no high-speed technique where we do that in the real world. There are specific instances where we, you know, in a door, somebody, you know, one operator will kneel and somebody else will be above them. But then we have standing procedures and we know the communication to do it safely. But just as a whole, we don't violate those rules no matter what the situation is. So if you wouldn't do it on a square range training by yourself, why would you do it under somebody else's supervision without saying, this is wrong, I'm not going to do this? So part of it starts with having to have a little bit of personal responsibility. It's a shame that you should ever be put in that situation where you would have to use those skills, but you never give up the responsibility for your own safety, and anybody can prevent an accident.
Do you think that, and I completely agree with you, let me offer a counterpoint just for you to consider. Do you think that it's easy for us, and you are light years ahead of me, and I am light years ahead of certain people as far as the level of experience and training that we've received, do you think it's easy for us to forget that very beginning, basic starting place where you don't even understand what safety is, and you are completely 100% reliant on your instructor to provide that modeling and example for you?
And you're absolutely correct. Therein lies some of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
A student should be vetted through certain levels of prerequisite formal education before being able to be enrolled in more advanced types of training, particularly tactical training.
Right.
It is unfair to take a student who hasn't successfully completed a basic carbine operator course and expect them to succeed in a shoot house course, for example.
Right.
But that is impossible. They can't. I just returned from a week of teaching at the Ohio Tactical Officers Association.
Mm-hmm.
And I just taught intermediate distance carbine for SWAT officers, a great experience and all that. But I'm always training the trainers. So, you know, with all those groups, I'm saying, part of me training the trainer is saying, look, with this kind of training, when you go back home and you run it, I am going to teach you how to run a hot line, meaning for the majority of training until I specifically instruct people to download their carbines as a group, we're running hot weapons, condition one, loaded, round in the chamber, mechanical safety engaged, dust cover closed, controlling your weapon at all times. There is a very, very safe way to do that, and it accelerates the speed of training and the evolution so you can get completed in a certain amount of time. But it would be completely unreasonable to take somebody who does not have an advanced amount of training and expect that they're going to run a hot line or participate in that safely.
Right.
You would be setting that person up for failure. You would be setting the students in the class up for exposure to an unsafe condition. You know, it would just be unacceptable.
Right. So I guess it's kind of a two-part, and we got a couple minutes left before the end of the show. It's kind of a two-part problem where not only do the students not know what they don't know, but sometimes the instructors really don't have a clear understanding of what they are missing out on as far as their formal education goes as well.
Well, you know what, both for students and instructors, professionalism is more than the badge or the uniform or the idea you have on, or excuse me, the ID you have in your pocket. You know, professionalism far exceeds that. We train a wide variety of people. I have a wide array of friends from multiple different backgrounds, but they all have in common that they are professionals.
Right.
Just because somebody has a big fancy pedigree from the military or law enforcement doesn't necessarily mean that they're a good or a safe or a valid trainer that would tend to follow, because somebody's had to go through multiple levels of formal instruction and certification and vetting. But that doesn't rule out that there are many, many civilians who most of their training may primarily be done through civilian instructors who you know, they've been inculcated in all of the valid and correct procedures, both to be technically and tactically proficient as well as safe in what they do. So I agree, it's a very, very difficult task for the average consumer to say, who should I give my training dollars to?
Right.
I always say look for reputation.
Yeah. So if people want to find out more about what you and Chappie are doing, let's give them your website again real quick, and then I think that's going to take us right to the bumper music at the end of the show.
Hey, Forge Tactical, F-O-R-G-E, tactical.com. Look at our schedule. Look at the prerequisites. We truly believe in what we're doing, and we don't exclude anybody who is capable of coming to train with us.
Well, and I've trained with both you and Chappie. It's a lot now at this point. Not under the new banner, but I can't wait to make it out to one of the new classes. Hey, thanks so much for coming on, man. I really, really appreciate it. I'm really, really thankful that you finally made it onto the show.
I hope I'll be invited back sometime. You're
definitely
doing a great job, brother.
Hey, I appreciate that, man, very much. So, hey, enjoy the rest of your night. Be safe, all right?
Thank you.
All right. Talk to you later. So make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com. Like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. And, hey, keep leaving those 5-star review on iTunes. We really appreciate it. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next week.